This is the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo, giving you the inside track on all the big talking points from Anfield.
Hello and welcome to the latest Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. I'm Joe River, joined today by Paul Ghost. How are we, Paul?
Good. Gearing up for a night in London for West Ham tomorrow, 12:30 kickoff, which we know at Liverpool they're not too big of fans of, but the last one of the season, so yeah, let's get it out the way.
Yeah, it's not been the greatest week, has it, Theo Squires?
No, I'm enjoying this double dose of derby demolition, whatever we're doing.
You've come in for you're a glutton for punishments, aren't you?
Yeah, clearly.
Yeah. Well, we're back on YouTube. It's the first time I've been back on YouTube, not for you because you were here yesterday, but first time I've been back on YouTube for a few weeks. My holidays and Ian Crowell's holidays, and our producer crossing over. So yeah, it's good to be back on YouTube. So if you've got a question, a thought, you want to shout out, do you want to cry about Liverpool? Just stick it in the comments.
Get it in the comments, and yeah, we're here.
We'll cry with you. We'll hold you.
Big shout out to the fella in the barbers yesterday, by the way. Who told us that he's a big fan of the pod, which was unexpected. Not that he's a fan of the pod, but unexpected that this fella in front of me would be listening to our tone. So yeah, nice one for that.
Nice one. Yeah, love that. Whenever I was at a kid's like soft play once, and some guy said he enjoyed the pod, which was pretty cool. Yeah,
I had my brother's uni roommates in Southend. They listened to the pod. Yeah, so they found it quite weird that he was my brother.
Yeah,
it's always nice, isn't it? Because we get enough stick on Twitter. I know I do. So yeah, it's nice to hear some positive comments for once. But not much positive about today, I guess, Joe.
Yeah. Well, if you do like the pod, give us a like. If you listen on YouTube, press the bell to get notifications. Subscribe. If you listen on Apple Podcasts, give us some stars, as we always say. Give us five, give us four. If you want to give us three or below, just don't bother.
Yeah,
just leave it. Pod and keep your feelings to yourself. Only good feelings necessary. And a big thanks to NordVPN, who sponsor our pod. To get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/bloodred. And our link gives you 4 extra months free on a 2-year plan. There's no risk at all, but they're 30-day money-back guarantee. And we'll put the link in the podcast episode description box. So thank you to Nord for sponsoring us. Let's start with, we will get into the derby, unfortunately. Let's start with, our producer, just distracting me by giggling away. He's not going to tell us why.
He's still on a high, the Everton supporting producer.
Directly at us. Let's start. We'll get into the derby for our sins, but let's start with Arne Slot, who Ghosty is looking like he's increasingly likely to become Liverpool's new manager. Negotiations with Feyenoord coming along and expected to end at a positive conclusion for Liverpool.
Yeah, so negotiations started top of the week, maybe. I think Liverpool have offered an initial offering of around about €9 million, which has been turned down. I think they're holding out for somewhere between 10 and 12 million pounds, that is, so whatever that totals in euros. And to be fair, that it'd already make him one of the highest managerial exits in Dutch football if Liverpool were to pay €9 million. But if it creeps over the figure the final would want, that'll be, you know, sort of in the top five in world football, really. I think at the moment it's maybe Graham Potter, Chelsea paid to get him out of Brighton, and there's a couple of others that around the sort of 15 million mark. So
I'm him up there.
I think he was around about €30 million when he went from
Braga
to Sporting after 12 games or something like that. So yeah, Feyenoord holding out for that, but you'd imagine the negotiations are well underway, that at some point they will strike a deal, the magic number will be met, and Arne Slot will be confirmed as the new Liverpool manager. Of course, things can change, and maybe, you know, if they drag on too long, Liverpool will be minded to walk away. But I can't see it at this stage. He sounds very confident himself. He's spoken 3 or 4 times already, actually, about Liverpool's interest, which is quite refreshing from our perspective as journalists and people who want to know what's going on. But I wonder how happy Liverpool are that he's, you know, willing to reveal such details out in the open in press conferences and so on. But I guess he feels confident enough to reveal that information that it wouldn't be too much of an issue for Liverpool. But at the moment, the club are keeping the council and not a whole lot is being said on it. But speaking to people on the other end of things this week, it does sound like the wheels are certainly in motion, and I wouldn't be surprised if it's confirmed in the coming days, really.
Yeah, I mean, We've been talking about that in the office, weren't we? Getting prepared. He was typically Dutch, typically forthright, confident in himself, really clear communicator, Theo. And yeah, he spoke in that press conference. I don't think I've ever seen that before, where a manager's sort of gone, yeah, I hope it happens.
Yeah, yeah.
And not really rock the boat so much, but kind of just be quite straight about it.
Yeah, it seems to be very Dutch and very German, but it's always the Dutch that are that much outspoken. They just say it how it is. Yeah. And it seems in Holland...
Kermit in his Christmas trees.
Yeah.
Lack a lot of time for that, though, but I like that.
Yeah, but it seems in Holland, they're almost excited for him as well. Mm. Like, they're seeing it as a coup for them that our great manager is going to go and manage one of the best teams in the world, potentially. And as Gusty said, it's just refreshing, because it's not the fact that he's just come out and said, I want to go to Liverpool. It's the fact that they're in talks, it's going to be a record fee. I think it will be done in the next few days. I've done this, and this for this club. Got good contacts here. I think it's time to reward that faith.
Yeah.
It just seems to be all moving in the right direction quite along nicely. We'll just see what happens with it. Like, Liverpool, for so long, it was quiet with who they were going to go for. Obviously, there was speculation about Alonso and Amorim, but the club never really guided too much on that. Compare that to like Bayern Munich, when they were going for Alonso and they were speaking about it to anyone who would listen. Now, Liverpool, they've just gone, done the business quietly, made the move, and it looks like they're going to get the deal done quite quickly. Obviously, with Feyenoord, they've had to wait for them to get the Dutch Cup final out the way, and that's something that they want. Last weekend, and then within a matter of days, Liverpool have opened talks from the verge of getting the new manager.
Okay, well, someone's asked, Wayne Ivory's asked us, are we individually excited about life after Klopp and Slot? Start with you, Kirsty.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't had a great amount of time to look into it, really, because we've obviously had the derby and various shift patterns and whatever. I haven't had too much time to look at it, but I guess, you know, if Klopp is going to leave, then you've got to look at this new era with a bit of excitement, you know, probably more so than trepidation. I think it's a chance for the club to go in a little bit of a new direction, but still with some kind of underpinning traits. You know, we've spoken loads about it being a data-led process, and you know, they're not just a phrase that's being said. It's certainly being, you know, done behind the scenes, to the point where they think that Arnslot's firing orders the closest fit stylistically to what Jürgen Klopp's Liverpool is. A little bit of subtle differences with his 4-2-3-1 as opposed to a 4-3-3, but certainly Ruben Amorim played three centre-backs, which means that Liverpool would need to do some work in the market at that end of the pitch, because Joel Matta might leave and, yeah, you know, might need to reinvest heavily there. And Alonso, you know, I know a lot of people wanted him, and look at the job he's done, you can see why, but a little bit more of a Man City style about things. So I guess no time will only tell, but it's, I'm quite excited, really, just because he sounds like he's a very confident, you know, open character, and that's the sort of manager who I want to be dealing with on a Friday at the AXA Training Centre, more so than anything else. So I don't,
it's not all about you, Gus.
No, but what it'll do is it'll, you know, it's not going to be a manager who doesn't give anything away and doesn't say much, and, you know, I couldn't imagine, as a Manchester United correspondent or a supporter of Manchester United, having to listen to Erik ten Hag week after week, because very rarely says anything of note. You know, it's the same tone, win, lose or draw.
There's facial expression, win, lose,
yeah,
or draw.
I mean, I think there's a lot to be said for our managers, obviously what they do on the pitch tactically and all that stuff, but there's a lot to be said for how they conduct themselves in front of the cameras and the personality, and, you know, Klopp is evidence of that, isn't he? He's, you know, no one's got a bigger personality than him in the Premier League managerial wise. So, yeah, I'm quietly excited. I think, obviously, you'd rather Klopp stays for another 3 years and whatever else, but he's made his decision, and, yeah, quietly excited.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
What about yourself, Theo?
Yeah, I think so. Like, from what I've seen, there's the styles that are similar between the two. He's obviously high-pressing, it's attacking football. And as Gorsty said there, with the three-man defence, if it'd been one of the other two managers, at least you're sticking with what you already know. Liverpool already got a Dutch influence when you think of how much impact Pep Linders has had behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. And we know he's moving on. But to have that similar school of thought coming in is going to mean it's hopefully quite an easy transition. It'll just be interesting to see how he settles in, because where Klopp goes, it'd be very easy a few months down the line to be pining for Klopp if it doesn't go well. And we know Manchester United did it with Ferguson, but Ferguson retired. Ferguson was not coming back. Whereas if a year's time, you could easily see Spurs, if it's not gone well, hoping, even though it's not going to happen, that Jurgen Klopp can come and rescue the ship. But you think, if the manager time, give him faith, if he comes in and he says the right things, the fact that he's started well, he's really outspoken, and that's impressing you itself, the fact that the manager really wants to come work for your club, then it's setting a good scene here, and you just hope that he can have a positive start. Jurgen Klopp's left a really good base for him. Obviously, it's had a disappointing few weeks here. They're not going to be winning the quadruple or anything, but they've got a very young squad with exciting players, needs a bit of fine-tuning, but excited for what's next, because 9 years, it's a long time with the same manager. You look at throughout Klopp's career, there's a lot of highs, but then it does tend to decline a little bit towards the end before he moves on. It does feel like a fresh pair of eyes on it, a fresh pair of hands could get Liverpool right back there, taking points off City, fingers crossed, going for titles, going for Champions Leagues.
I was having this conversation with a mate the other day. He messaged me saying he was a bit underwhelmed, and I've said to him, well, don't assume that your level of football, not necessarily you, this lad in particular, but you know, our general knowledge of football is the extent of the clubs. You know, there are people within the club who will know far more than we do about how his team has developed over the last 3 years at the Kuip, is it, the stadium. You know, won the Eredivisie title, got to the final of the Conference League, beaten by Jose Mourinho's Roma, which I don't think is an indictment. I obviously, getting to a final as a managerial achievement, has just as much a success as winning that one-off game in the final itself. If you're looking at kind of how to judge a manager, I mean, rather than, you know, what it says about your honours list. But
if you consistently compete for honours, I think that's more important than you can lose every final.
Yeah, I mean, Liverpool, who lost, what was it, 2 Premier League titles on the final day, that doesn't mean that Jurgen Klopp, you know, any less of a manager because of
that. Final did this by selling the best player as well. Yeah. They had to restructure that squad after selling Berghaus to Ajax, and they still competed for the biggest honours. And Liverpool haven't had to do that for a while since, what, Coutinho left.
Just won the Dutch Cup on Sunday, second at the moment to a runaway PSV team. So, yeah, there's a lot to like. And, of course, we're going to have to speak to the experts of Dutch football to get a bit of a better understanding, and that will come in time. But I've quietly excited that it could be a decent appointment.
Yeah, I mean, I understand the feeling of being underwhelmed. A lot of people are saying that. Someone in the comments here, call me Kenneth, has said he's not remotely excited. He'll give him a fair chance, and he's happy to be wrong. I don't think you're going to be overwhelmed by any of these managers. There's only one for me that would have done it for me, and that was Alonso. And I am a big believer in managers need the X factor when they come in. I think people forget about Klopp. It wasn't just what his teams were doing on the pitch and the progress Dortmund had made. It was his personality that shone. That was why we all thought he would be a good fit for Liverpool, because he was outspoken, he was likable, he was relatable.
So his media briefings, wasn't it, when he got to the Champions League final in 2013? Because it was at Wembley. Obviously, that was the first time the English press had seen him up close. It's like, wow, this is a manager we really like, the same as they had been with Mourinho 10 years earlier.
Exactly. But I don't necessarily think, now that Alonso isn't available, there is that manager out there that's available with the X factor. So I think Liverpool have to be creative, and this is them being creative. And I think, you know, look, time will tell, but I like that they tried to line up playing styles. You know, we'll talk a lot about the squad and the rest of the pod, but you know, the last 3-4 weeks have been difficult, but let's not forget the progress the squad has made this season. You know, it wasn't long ago that we were sitting on this pod saying, you know, with a few tweaks it could get even better, and I still think that would be the case. I still don't think it's not revolution in the summer, is it? It's evolution, which is a bit of a cliche, but it's true, you know. And I think if Slot can come in, if he plays a similar style and can give the, like you said, give the players some fresh ideas and a fresh voice, it might just motivate them a little bit. It might just push them a little bit further. It might not, but that's the risk you take with any manager, mightn't it?
Yeah, I think it's probably the right way to go about it when you're losing a manager who has just decided to walk away, as opposed to losing a manager who's had a terrible run and needs to be put out of his misery. So you're not recruiting a totally different system and set of ideas, and you're not jumping into the unknown that way. You're trying to keep as much cohesion on the pitch as possible, and they obviously see it that way with the data, don't they? You know, Will Spearman, Michael Edwards, who was a big proponent of all that, and Not sure how much of a say, if any, that the sporting director or incoming sporting directors had, but yeah, that's always been the thing, hasn't it? You know, 3 months to the day since Klopp announced he was leaving.
Yeah.
The noise has always been it's going to be a data-led process, and even as far as, was it last week or the week before, we were hearing that it could be a left-field appointment if Michael Edwards thinks that this is the guy it's going to be. Yeah, and I suppose this is it manifesting, because I don't think too many had Arne Slot on the bingo card until recently.
Yeah, I mean, as well, he ticks some boxes for what you want from a manager. I mean, I don't know whether, you know, if you're listening or watching and you haven't seen it, go away and watch. There's a team talk that he gives after I think Feyenoord had just beaten Ajax or PSV. They beat one of their title rivals last season in the run to winning the title. And he gives a team talk in English, and it's just so clear, it's bold, it's inspirational, but without going over the top. It is really good, and it makes you think, if that's the way he comes in and communicates with players, then surely they will respond. And he does have that confidence in himself that doesn't manifest as arrogance. It does, you know, it feels like the right balance. You know, and he's combative, hasn't he? We've seen before, he's rubbed up Simeone and Mourinho, which I suppose isn't hard, but he's rubbed both of them up the wrong way. He's had things with them. You know, Klopp does that, doesn't he? When you know, because he's so focused on what he wants his team to do. So, look, you know, it is a bit of a... it's the unknown, isn't it? Like, we haven't changed manager for nine years at Liverpool, so it's going to be different. You know, put it this way, I think if you said to me next season, third, I'd probably shake your hand on it now, because I think if he can stabilise and keep Liverpool where they are and bring in some of his ideas... and
it's taken the same as what they've done this year. Top four in a trophy, happy days.
Oh, I mean, I'd absolutely shake your hand on that. People forget, I know Klopp took them to two finals in his first sort of two-thirds of a season, but the following year was all about stability, wasn't it?
It was top four,
top four.
Yeah.
And slowly bringing in players and letting the squad improve. So
I think it's not helped him that he's the third name. Like, we don't know how close they were with Amorim, but if he was the one that had come in forward after Alonso, that's that excitement. But because everyone was accepting, oh, it's not going to be Alonso, who's next? The fans clung to Amorim, thinking he's going to be the one now.
Again, no, with that, I don't ever think Liverpool give too much encouragement over Xabi. I think supporters maybe started putting two and two together, and it did feel like an organic fit and an exciting one.
Yeah.
But no one at Liverpool ever said to me, for example, Xabi Alonso is the one we're after.
Yeah.
And even Amorim, even less sort of, you know, speculation on that or chatter about around him. So I don't necessarily think he's third choice. He maybe might have been second, but I wouldn't say he was any less favoured than Ruben Amorim.
Yeah.
And what's different here is when Liverpool lost in the market for a manager, they were lucky that they could be in the conversation for a Jurgen Klopp. They were lucky they could be in the conversation for Carlo Ancelotti. Here it's going to be someone, right, why should you be the next Liverpool manager? Why do you deserve this chance? And obviously Arne Slot seems to have ticked a lot of boxes. There's already the connection with his backroom team too. His assistant, Sipke Husqvarna. He's the Netherlands assistant manager. Virgil van Dijk's been really praising him when they've worked together. He's worked obviously with Gakpo, with Gravenberch. So when you've already got that connection there, it's not going to be completely new on day one.
Yeah.
It is hopefully a head start for him.
Well, it's going to be an entirely new backroom team, isn't it? Because obviously Pep Linders, Vita Matos, Peter Kravitz all leaving. So he's going to
have... Schlumberger as well, isn't it? Schlumberger.
Yeah, Andreas Schlumberger at the end of the season. So... he's going to have to bring people with him, isn't he? So it's going to be an entirely new operation.
Yeah, Ashley Jewell in the comments has said it's good to remember that it's the first time a manager leaving has not been sacked. So it does have a different feel, and that's correct, isn't it? You know, I think we're not talking about a complete overhaul of Liverpool's position. Of, you know, again, when Klopp came in, it was the whole club. Again, people forget, before Klopp came in, the transfer committee wasn't seen as a positive thing at Liverpool.
Still there.
It was very much a negative thing, and it was Klopp that helped turn that the feel of that around.
So, and the backroom team that changed it 2 months earlier.
Yeah. So there was constant change, and it's been nothing but stability really for 9 years. It's going to feel like something into the unknown, but I like that there are parallels running between the way Klopp operates and the way Slot operates. So we'll have to see. You know, I think it'd be really intriguing. I'm, like you say, a big believer in managers being really clear communicators. And he seems to be that. He seems to back himself. really looking forward to that first press conference.
Yes, yeah.
I remember Klopp's first press conference. I was running our live blog at the time, and you know, all of our analytics on the website went through the roof. You know, everyone around the world tuned in.
And I remember watching, keeping up with it on the live blog. Yeah,
yeah, great live blog, wasn't it? Paper the next day was was like a huge seller. You know, it was a really exciting time, and you know, walk over hot coals to have another 3 years with Klopp. I still think anyone overlooking what that man's achieved at the club is just plain silly. But it's refreshing, isn't it, sometimes to have a new start. And I think it will inject a bit of a life into the fan base, into the players, maybe.
Yeah, it's, like you say, it is a fresh voice, isn't it? And I also think as well there might be a tweaking of how the club operate recruitment wise, because for years we know the Klopp didn't necessarily rock the boat or bang the drum too hard when players were needed, and maybe this fella is going to be slightly different, and it's a different sporting director as well, isn't it? And it's essentially a new head of the club. You know, for years it was Mike Gordon, and Mike Gordon would tell Jürgen Klopp, you're not having £50 million for a centre-back in what, January or whatever. Michael Edwards is now the one making those decisions, you'd imagine, having worked on the other side of it, you know, kind of going capping on to Mike Gordon, and he's someone working with someone who he knows really well, and Richard Hughes. So yeah, it's an entirely different structure and setup behind the scenes, but there's plenty of scope there for excitement.
Okay, well, let's talk the derby. We're gonna have to, so let's do it. Let's rip that plaster off.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
Of course, it was the worst derby under Klopp, wasn't it?
That doesn't
make no bones about it. What worried me is that going into it, you knew how Everton were going to set up. You knew how they were going to play. You knew it felt like me. It felt to me such a naive derby performance. I mean, it's a cliche, isn't it? And it's straight out the Sean Dyche playbook to say this, but you've got to earn the right to play. And I felt like Liverpool went there.
You've been watching too many of his press conferences.
Yeah, I probably have. But I felt going in, if Liverpool went and got the ball down and played, they would have won that game. But you have to win the battles to get the ball down and play.
Well, right.
It was almost like they just expected to be allowed to play. And fair play to Everton, they treated that game like a derby match. And that's why they won, in my eyes.
Yeah, I spoke to a guy who works for Everton, David Alexander Hughes, who obviously used to work on Lars and Anfield, didn't he? And said to me before the game, I just think it'll go, and paid it a little bit of lip service. I didn't truly believe it myself, but I thought, I didn't say Liverpool are going to batter these tonight. I kind of said, well, I think Liverpool will create chances, they'll miss chances, and then you've got a fighting chance with set pieces, you know, Tarkowski specifically, and obviously if Calvert-Lewin's fit, because at the time we didn't know. And that was kind of how it turned out, wasn't it? You know, Liverpool fell right into the trap. I thought not picking Endo as the number six was a big mistake, given the aerial bombardment of Everton, given the fact that he would have been better picking up the second balls to an exhausted Alexis McAllister. They kept giving away fouls in their own half, which was naive, because Everton gave Everton the chance to pump it long into the box, and Tarkowski and Branthwaite and just played into Everton's hands every step of the way. And it looked like too many of them didn't know it was a Merseyside derby, didn't know that Everton is a team who your rivals and you'd have to beat. And that's unforgivable, really. And also, as well, this idea of Liverpool starting game slowly has been a season-long issue, and it's one we've talked about on this pod time and time again. But nothing seems to be being done to address it. And that is on Klopp, to be fair. At no point have Liverpool flown out of the traps in a game and you think, well, they look like they've listened to a different message today or whatever. They start slowly, they get punished, and then they kind of snap themselves out of it. But you can't do it every week, and you certainly can't do it at Goodison Park when Everton's blood's up.
Yeah, to go along with that.
Yeah, as you both said, you knew exactly what Everton were going to do. And if you start slowly, that's going to get the crowd up. You give them set pieces, that's going to get the crowd up. Everton, they nearly get that early penalty. That also gets the crowd up.
Yeah.
And that was a let-off for Liverpool. And they didn't take advantage of it. As soon as the goal goes in, Everton can just sit deep, play even more for set pieces, play on the counter. And the game just suited them perfectly. Sean Dyche got his tactics spot on. And as you said, Liverpool Jurgen Klopp got the team wrong.
The section was all over the place.
I forgive the attack because there was nothing else he could do. They had no Gakpo, no Jota, and maybe Gakpo would have started if it hadn't been for his missus going into labour. But it was going to be Diaz dropping out rather than Salah and Nunes that are so out of form. Like, Liverpool played really well against Fulham. So why not reward some of those players and keep them in that team and go, you've done well, you're fresh, you're in a bit of form, keep the place, rather than hoping one weekend off and McAllister's going to be back to his best, Nunes is going to be back to his best, Salah's going to be back to his best. You just hope he can change it the other way, and we are going to see some of these players. But there's so many individual errors. The midfield just never looked like they were going to ever get in control of that game and win the battle. And then the forwards, they got the chances and they just missed them. Everything was off, the touches were letting them down, they were rushing everything. It's just a really poor performance from a sluggish team. They got what they deserved.
I think with Klopp, one of his great strengths is his ability to put his faith in players, and even when they're not perhaps playing well, back, he's can back them. He plays almost so off and back, Joe, and to for me, like, he's the effort.
He's probably
in the middle. It was a good Catalanian scrap. Kanate has been out of form for ages. He backed him.
That's half the team.
Yeah, exactly. And then the forward line, I agree with you. There isn't much they could have done with the forward line. So it had to kind of be what it was. But you also know when you're picking the rest of your team, your forward line, two of those forwards are really struggling with confidence at the moment.
Yeah.
And to have that right throughout the team, I just thought was odd. I mean, not picking Endo, who's capable in the air. All right, he's not the tallest lad, but he wins a lot of headers.
Yeah.
And I just thought that struck me as bizarre that you wouldn't pick him in that game.
Especially when you've got a fight, you're all up your sleeves and put a foot in, and Liverpool didn't have anyone willing to do that, did they? Yeah. And I thought it was a little bit harsh on Elias as well, because he didn't do anything wrong with Fulham, thought he played well.
He's been playing well, keeps the ball well.
Shields it well. Maybe to a lesser extent, Gravenberch.
But it's funny, if you're doing your combination of midfields, you could say Endo, Elliot and McAllister would have been too short, so that's why he's gone Szoboszlai and Jones. But Gravenberch is massive. Like, you could have found a better combination than the three that played.
But even, if you're playing Szoboszlai, I can understand if you line up alongside Endo and McAllister. To me, that midfield's got more balance. It's got more physicality. And it's going to win more battles than the midfield that he did put in, which, just didn't look balanced. Actually, have we seen that midfield play together before this season? Jones, McAllister, Szoboszlai?
Maybe it would have played against like Villa or West Ham right at the start of the season.
It doesn't ring a bell. I just thought it was very odd. And then Kanate has been all over the place. And again, I don't necessarily think the Merseyside derby is the place to have a defender who really is out of form. I mean, I even think Joe Gomez would have been a better shout than Kanate there.
He could have been Trent in midfield then. And that's a different option.
But my other frustration with Liverpool at the moment is obviously that they're very good at unleashing long balls. You know, that I think of the top three teams, Liverpool mix it up a lot more, and Trent coming back into midfield into the teams allowed them to come into midfield. But the amount of long balls that they play, I've seen so many times now where I thought they did it against Atalanta, where they just ran out of ideas and just kept putting it long and trying to win individual battles, and it's predictable. You're not going to play those long balls against a team as physical and as good in the air as Everton and expect for success. I just thought it just constantly happens. Trent is trying too hard to play the perfect pass over the head to too many players, and I thought they needed a complete reset, and it really was a really poor performance.
It was textbook what not to do, wasn't it? Every single trap available, and full credit to Evan, first Merseyside derby win at Goodison Park since 2010, and they were fully deserving of it, and a first derby, only a second one since then, which the other one was behind closed doors, weren't it? Which, I don't know about anyone else, but it's completely right off that entire season. It was a bit of a nonsense. But Everton fully deserved it. And fans probably forgotten what it's like to experience a derby defeat. But, that's why you expect the players to give their all, because it's horrible.
Yeah, a lot of people, and there's quite a lot in the comments saying this, Klopp looks a shell of himself. A lot of psychoanalysis going on for Klopp at the moment. And I said to you the night you came back from his presser before, and he does strike me as a very tired man. Someone who's been in a workplace too long.
He's got his Aldi book.
He's taking it at the corner. He's seeing it out.
And my slight worry is that almost just by default will start seeping into the players. Mm. And again, that's why you think the new manager, if he comes in with a confidence and a bounce, can put that into the players. And Klopp seemed to have that again last summer, didn't he? And we all talked about him being refreshed. But as the season's gone on, and he said something after the game, which I thought was really interesting because I've said it in a few pods. They let that Man United game, started with the FA Cup game, but certainly in the league game, get into their heads where they went away to Old Trafford, dominated part of the game. All right, they conceded sloppy goals, but at times looked 10 times the team United are. Because they didn't win either game, it was almost like their season had gone, gone there and then. And I thought there was so much still.
Klopp's referenced that twice as well in recent times. Definitely on Wednesday night, and there was another game recently where he brought it up as well.
And it worries me that they haven't been able to address that. That it worries me that they haven't been able to get the message across to the players.
Well, you see it in Van Dijk's post-match interviews as well, where he's obviously frustrated and going, it's like the players don't know what it takes to win the league. They don't know how much they want it, that sort of vibe. Mm. Well, there's only, five, six players in that squad who have been available. Mm. Actually, half of them haven't been available, have they, for most of the season, but have got that experience so you can bring it to the younger players and show this is what it takes, this is what he needs, and drive the levels. And it just so happens some of those players have been at the club an awful long time. I mean, are they starting to decline now? Are they part of the long-term future? So it's that transitional period there in the sense of what's coming next. It's why you'd have maybe liked a couple of years more of Klopp to hand over. But if he's not got the energy, obviously it needs a fresh pair of hands on it. And obviously winning a League Cup, that wasn't whilst it was the first trophy, that's not enough to then spur on the next generation to go all the way. But they'll have this title experience, same as Arsenal did last year. Their first chance of going for the title, they choked in the final month, 6 weeks. I'm not going to say Liverpool choked, because looking at the team recently, they're not ready to win a Premier League title. But next season, they've had this experience of being close and falling short. They'll be back in the Champions League. They can take another step in the right direction.
I don't necessarily buy into teams choking in the sense that when you look at Man City, I mean, look how good they get. You know, they just get themselves into a groove, don't they? Trent said it in a few interviews recently. They're so good, Man City, that they make anyone look like chokers against them. You know, you can't stumble, you can't. That was what, the fourth game Liverpool have lost in the league this season?
Four games in 44, which dates back to, I mean, kind of run towards the end of last season
than Arsenal, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great run. They obviously draw too many games, but it's been a great run. So I think I don't like to sort of label chokers, but I think psychologically, it does worry me, the United thing. And I hope they can pick up from that, and I hope that this end of the season doesn't spill over, and perhaps that's why a change is good. But I think what I want to stress on this pod today, and I want to get both your opinions on it, is that, it's been about four weeks or so, but there's a lot of things being said about Liverpool right now. A lot of players being written off, a lot of people asking for overhauls. I mean, even in the comments here, I can see a lot of people talking very negatively about players, and rightly so after the last few weeks. But also, let's not forget 8 months of progress, of commitments, of hard work, of players that have really shone at times, and also a season who, we were talking in January, how many injuries did this team have? It was again, felt like every day we were writing news stories about injuries. So we can't put that aside, that you have to keep that in your mind, and you have to judge the season as a whole. And if this was the first season under Arne Slot, all right, you'd be gutted about the not winning the title, but you'd probably go, that's a great season of progress. A league cup, progress in the league, back in the Champions League, went far into the Europa, gutted we didn't win it. But you'd be quite happy. And I think again, if Liverpool had stumbled in, say, January, February, and righted themselves and finished third, again, you'd be quite happy. But it's the way it's happened that people are getting carried away.
Yeah, a lot of it is perception and how you finish, isn't it? You know, Liverpool, there was so much optimism around the summer because of how Liverpool finished that season. Was it 8 wins from the last 10 games, something like that? You're right. I think if you'd have said when Liverpool came off the pitch against Southampton last season after that 4-4 draw, that this is going to be what next season looks like, Carabao Cup, fighting for the title inside the last 4 games, probably going to finish third, back in the Champions League, and these are the players you're going to bring in, you'd probably say, yeah, take that. It's almost just felt that because Klopp come out in January and said he was leaving, that everything just suddenly became concentrated into this big emotional snowball of, you know, wouldn't it be great to send them out that way? And it would have been, of course, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen. And you know, that's fair enough. This is a new squad, relatively new squad with plenty of experience, but also so many who were whose best days are ahead of them. So yeah, it's going to be, like I say, it's going to be exciting, and I'm interested now to see what happens in terms of the summer.
It's another good reason why a new manager's coming in, because it's easy to be reactionary when you look at these players and the form recently and go, Salah's past it, Guest, get rid. Nunes is never going to be good enough, get rid. Well, a new manager comes in and he doesn't have those emotional ties to them, he doesn't have that sentimentality. He can look at the data, he can look at it from afar and see what they've been doing over the whole season and go, right, you fit into my plans, you don't, and really assess it, be a bit brutal, but do it in the right way. And obviously Klopp has been accused of being a bit too attached to some of his players, having a bit of favouritism and looking after them when maybe they should have gone earlier or not been in the team.
Which is normal, by the way.
It is normal. Like, all the managers do it. It's natural when you're working with someone for so long and you've got so many highs with them. But when you are starting fresh there, it means Liverpool can have this clean look at things and go again. Like, we'll see whether Darwin Nunes, this is as good as it's going to get, or if he can find that killer touch in front of goal. We'll see if Mohamed Salah has got another 2-3 years left at the highest level, or if this is the start of natural decline and you look to the future. Like, Diaz, there's been so much said about his future. That's just three off the top of my head. I'm sure your comments have got a fair few other players they're writing off there as well. We can make the same arguments for.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
First of all, thank you for all the comments. Loads coming in. Keep them coming in. Any questions or any topics of discussion, let us know. But let's have a look at those two players in particular, because I did want to talk about both of them. Darwin Nunes, it's someone we talk about all season, every season since he's joined the club. But obviously,
you should have had a camera on us on the way back from the training ground. We've probably had this conversation already today.
Hugely frustrating night on Wednesday night. Hugely frustrating few weeks. Certainly for Darwin Nunes, but it had felt before that, Gorsley, like this was a season of progression for him. It felt like his levels had gone up a little bit from last season. It now feels like he's levelling out a little bit, and that he's ending last season like he's ending this season like he played last season. It seems to me that, are we seeing the true level of Darwin Nunes, or is he just in a bit of a rut and will continue to improve?
Yeah, I mean, I've spoken glowingly about him on this pod for so long. But a bit of a crystallizer moment for me on Wednesday night when he lashes that one at Jordan Pickford, and you're thinking there's only so long you can kind of explain away these misses. And it was not necessarily a reaction to that one miss or that one performance. You know, this has been happening all season, and it's fine when Liverpool are winning games, and you're thinking, if he can just tighten that up and sharpen that up, he's going to be some player. And that remains true, but I'm starting to become concerned that it's never going to happen for him. I wonder whether there's a solution whereby he becomes a left winger and that's where he operates and does his best work, and Liverpool look to bring in a more clinical number nine, because I just don't think those improvements are being made. You know, every single finish is just hammer it straight down the keeper's throat and see what happens, and there's just a lack of precision and there's just a lack of clinical instinct to him, and that has really come to the fore while the others have been misfiring as well. You know, Liverpool have lacked conviction in front of goal for weeks now, and no one's epitomised that more than him, really. And it was just kind of a crystallising moment there on Wednesday night when he goes through, got 2/3 of the goal to aim at, go across the keeper like, you know, your Sunday league manager tells you to do or whatever, and he just hammered it at him.
Get over him.
Yeah, I mean, Michael Owen was spot on, wasn't he? You know, when he said that finish against Brentford was ridiculous and he shouldn't have been trying it, and everyone sort of said, oh, what's he on about there, Owen? But no, for all the stick Owen gets when he talks about a striker, you'd be minded to listen, because he knew how to stick it away, and he was right, wasn't he? You know, that finish was ridiculous, and it was an unbelievable finish, great goal, but 99 times out of 100 that's not going to go in. And I'm getting a bit tired of trying to explain these gilt-edged misses, really.
That we were going through some of them in the car on the way back, and just the last 2 weeks alone, you've got the United one where he tries to square it or something. I think that was the league game, don't we? It might have been the cup game, but it was one of the two United games.
It was the league game, yeah.
Yeah. Then he's got the one at Atalanta where he like tries to chip over the keeper with the outside of his foot, gets it horribly wrong, where just go round him. If you go round it, it's open goal. If the keeper, defender gets off the line, fair enough, but you've still got a better chance of scoring. The Palace one that still infuriates me when he just volleys it as hard as he can from 6 yards straight at the keeper.
That of all the ones you're describing, that one hit, came to him very quickly. I don't necessarily think he could have... There's some of them that I think...
But I still think the Michael Owen one, FA Cup final, you go for your angles, you aim for the corners.
That's a bit different.
I know it's a different type of strike, but you look for the corners there. You don't just hit it straight. Like, I'll forgive Diaz's one in the derby, where that's a high, awkward bounce. He hits it straight, but there's not much more he can do with it. But there's so much.
I thought the Palace one was more similar to that than the Pickford save, where Nunes is sent through.
Has all the time in the
And has a moment. You know, he has that. That killer moment that the top level players have to go, okay, roll this across, and you never see him roll the ball, do you? You never see him take the pace off it a little bit and just use the ball and
that even the two he scored against Newcastle, that was unbelievable power, wasn't it? Across goal,
they're the outliers, aren't they, of the finishers?
What worries me is that they obviously do work on it, because I think Klopp's spoken about it before. He said in all his press conference since the Everton game, we need to slow down. We need to calm down with our chances. And they obviously have had Nunes in training, going to him, come on, you know, like, relax. When you go through on goal, take a second. But as soon as it gets into the heat of the moment...
He's got blinkers on.
He just doesn't seem to be able to do that.
Did he try to do it last summer? I remember speaking to someone about it, and they were talking about what they're trying to do to improve the finishing, because they can clearly see that there's a player there, and if he can make these minor adjustments, he goes from a haul of 18 this season to 25.
Yeah.
But he seems to have regressed. You know, with that finish, there's two finishes against Bournemouth in the league game were really good.
Yeah.
They're the sort of finishes you'd expect them to be taking and improving on his goal tally. And the goals against Sparta Prague were what you'd expect of him, really. You know, didn't have time to think about either, just smashed them and they both go in. And when it comes off, he looks like a world beater. But the tappings that he's missing time and again are starting to become unforgivable, really.
And this is what...
Sorry, go on.
The overall haul is sort of protecting him at the moment, because he's pushing 20 goals. I think that's a really good season. But he's got a lot of them in the cup games in Europe. Is it, 11 in the Premier League? That is not a good return for an £85 million striker at a club like Liverpool. That is what you expect in mid-table. And he's got that haul because he's been playing in the Europa League against the Sparta Prague, against these lesser teams. Liverpool are back in the Champions League next year. You're not going to score as many against those sides because you're not going to face those sorts of sides. You're up against the absolute elite then. You need to take these chances. Like, he's had a similar amount of shots as Erling Haaland in the Premier League this season. I think there's only 2, 3, 4 sort of difference between the two. And he's missed actually less big chances. He's missed, I think, 26. Haaland's missed 30. When Haaland scored practically twice as many there, like, Haaland is clinical. He's a machine. He's having not the best moment recently, is he? But he's still scored a lot of goals, and he could easily end up with another Premier League winners' medal around his neck. Because Nunes still has a couple of levels left to find. And when you've been working on it for 2 years and we're still saying some of the same stuff we were saying about him when he came through the door, that's a concern.
It's frustrating, isn't it?
I've seen a statistic the other day, and I think it was before City played anyway, before Liverpool played. So before this week's round of fixtures, Nunes, I think, has been offside 30 times this season. Manchester City being offside 33. Yeah. So that's something that he's not learning as well. It goes beyond him just missing big chances, which can happen, but maybe not as frequently as they should be. But in terms of learning that side of the game, that's not happening either. He's not holding her up at all, which for me was the big frustration on Wednesday night. The ball was getting played into him and it was going under his feet, or he was getting bullied off the ball by Tarkowski. And
the poor touch he took.
The one we were talking about, the way when Trent plays him in and with a tighter touch he can turn and he's got a chance to one-on-one with Pickford.
Hugely frustrating.
Not a great touch.
About Costello,
to play it back to Salah, who gets the shot blocked and puts it over the bar. You're thinking if Jota takes that touch, he brings it into his stride, he's one-on-one with Pickford and he sticks it away. Nunes, it's potluck whether he's going to take the ball under control, and it's potluck whether he's going to finish it past Pickford. And I think for the money that you paid for him, you should be expecting more, really. Certainly two years in.
I will give him a small defence, and that is he has had the injuries as well. Like, he got injured against Brentford, and while it wasn't directly you're out for 2 months like Jota, I think he came back against Forest, and then he gets one against United. He didn't miss games with the United one, but it was the international break, so he's out for 2-3 weeks there. Like, it's obviously something that's happened behind the scenes that's knocked the rhythm. And we've seen that with a lot of players, how injury has just impacted them. Like, Konate's fallen apart since he came off against Sparta Prague. Salah hasn't looked the same. He looked all right. He showed glimpses against Brentford. But the second one, he's just not been the same since coming back. And other players have taken time. Gakpo took a long, long time to get back to anywhere near a good level of form after getting injured against Tottenham back in September. Robertson wasn't in the team straight away. It took time. Whereas Nunes has had to be thrown straight back in. So you can sort of understand how that all comes into it. But you're ruthless. It's a striker. You need to score goals. And when there's that price tag and there's that pressure at a title race, that's when you're going to ask the questions. If Liverpool were just going for top four and it wasn't Klopp's final season, then you're a bit more forgiving on him. But because those stakes have been upped, so is the criticism.
Yeah. I would say, by the way, just as an aside that you've just mentioned it then, the one big issue with this whole Liverpool squad that I think they need to look at in the summer, get far too many injuries.
Yeah.
Whether that's playing style, maybe it's the playing style, but there are far too many players in that squad that pick up so many injuries, it disrupts everything they do. And it's been like this way now for several years. They don't have anyone that they can really rely on. I mean, Van Dijk, you know, touch wood, is one of the ones that seems to play a lot of games, but elsewhere, I don't think anyone in the squad.
It's patterns, isn't it? Like Liverpool's
style, I suppose.
The things that count against Liverpool are patterns that they don't seem to be able to
for a club
to shake off.
Says data, 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 data. That one screams at me.
Yeah, starting game slowly is one that they haven't been able to amend. The muscle injuries that they've been getting for the best part of 2-3 years, that hasn't been addressed.
Hater, look at Oxlade Chamberlain after a serious injury.
Yeah. I mean, not. Sounds like we're throwing the baby out with the bathwater here, but there are things that hadn't been addressed, really.
Just going back to Nunes, first of all, I would say take the price tag out of it. That doesn't matter now. They've already paid that money or certainly committed that money. So it doesn't really, to me, I don't, other than being something you can write about or you can talk about, it shouldn't really affect how we view his performances. You know, it doesn't matter if he costs £1 or 100 million. You know, I want him to score goals and play well. I still wouldn't sell him. I like what you said. I think I would try moving to the left and play him off the left. But I do think all of these forwards now, I don't think there's one of those players in that front five that if Liverpool got a really good offer for, that you wouldn't have to have a proper conversation about it. Whether it be age with Salah, whether it be, I mean, Diogo Jota.
Injuries, yeah. Two seasons now.
I love Jota.
Since he joined, he had in his first season as well.
Love Jota as a player, but not fit often enough. Yeah. If you can't rely on him, then move him on. And you know, Diaz, you can rely on, he's probably one of the ones that's better in terms of availability. But there's a lot of talk about Barcelona, and he's one of the ones I can feel like Liverpool might think we can get a fee. He's 28, we can get a fee. He's wanting.
Yeah, both him and Jota.
He'll want to move. So that might happen.
The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo. The Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.
I mean, it was unthinkable, wasn't it? Liverpool selling Firmino, Mane or Salah. But now you're looking at across the front line and not just being reactionary because of a couple of bad results or because of Wednesday in particular, but you can see a world where Liverpool cash in on one of those five.
And replace and try and progress.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, and the way Liverpool are built as a club, they have to sell. That's how they evolve, don't they? They sell players.
I think Diaz looks like the most expendable.
Yeah.
Just because of the rooms around PSG and even Barcelona, they can afford them.
Yeah.
I'd say next season they need to have six. Whoever goes, they need six elite forwards.
If they carry on playing three up front.
Yeah, definitely. And they can say, well, what does that mean for a Ben Doak or Kay Gordon, Jaden Dance?
Well, sorry, you're saying six. I'm six. You're never going to have six elite forwards.
They had seven when they went for the four trophies a couple of years ago.
Origi and Minamino.
Still enough, isn't it?
Yeah, I see what you mean.
They were playing, it was because of injuries or rotation, wasn't it?
Like, you're not going to have six Mohamed Salahs, but still six where they can all start, they can all come on and make an impact, and that makes a difference. But they're not going to be able to sell all of these and start over. They're going to have at least three, if not four, of these five are going to be at the club next season. They could have all five. They're not going to be able to overhaul. And that's the most concerning thing, that this is a revamped attack. 2 years ago, they revamped it. They brought in these players. They replaced Mane. They replaced Firmino. They spent a lot of money. And went, Gakpo is our man. Nunes is our man. Yeah. Diaz is our man. And now it's not back to square one, but you're reassessing that business going, was this really the right steps we took? like Diogo Jota, he was a great one for coming in. And then when Firmino was not getting the goals, you had Jota as an alternative. But now he's almost at that end of the cycle of, if you want to sell him and get a profit, it's now or never. Otherwise, you're waiting for that contract to expire, him to decline. And the injury record there as well. Like the fact that there are question marks against all five of them, and you can argue it for all five of them. The only one who's coming out with credit at the moment is Gakpo, and that's because he's had a good month when everyone else has not
That's interesting though, isn't it? I think that hits a nail on the head for me, is that let's not throw the baby out with the bathwater. You're saying Gakpo's the only one with credit, but really, if you look at the season as a whole, it's the other four that have had the credit, and Gakpo, who's probably had a struggle over the whole of the season. So, look, I think they might have to sell one to evolve, but I don't necessarily think... I think Salah, I wouldn't be in any rush to get rid of Salah.
I don't think the appetite's there now for the Saudi thing. I mean, I might be wrong, but does anyone even mention it anymore? Seems like a bit of a perverse experiment that has died off less than a year in. Those clubs want to be that seemingly ideally fully kind of anyway.
If the top title happened, instead of 25-20 each, aren't they in? But what is the gist? And they're not scoring goals when they're falling short of winning these trophies, because Liverpool were able to dream bigger. It just doesn't look as a success that you thought it would have been back in the summer.
Yeah, Jordan Delory in the comments said it's lazy to say slots football is the same as Klopp's. I don't think anyone said it's exactly the same, because I don't think any manager's brand of football can be totally identical.
Exactly.
But there are similarities.
You've identified them based on what style of football. So,
And it means that, they evolve or they change, but it's not rip it up, start again. We're going to play a completely different style. We need to play completely different players. So,
unless he's watched Feyenoord more than us, he's
watched Feyenoord all the season. But I would suggest that, it might not be the exact same, but it's about similarities. We've been on for a while now, so let's look ahead to the West Ham game. Always tough games. It feels like West Ham's one of those places that they do quite well at, but I always think of it same with Palace. I think, West Ham away, but then they do have a good record there.
Yeah, they've generally done okay there the last few years, haven't they? Beat them there during COVID times, beat them there when the season they won the league, had to come back from a goal down last season to win 2-1, I think, Matip and Gakpo. Yeah, but it always feels like a difficult place, doesn't it? Like,
there's been a couple of defeats in there as well, haven't there?
Yeah, season finished second, you were there, weren't you?
Was it 3-2?
3-2, So it'll be tough. I generally tend to like West Ham when I see them play. I love Lucas Paqueta, I think he's a great player. Jared Bowen, Antonio's a good old-fashioned rugged centre-forward, isn't he? It'll be tough, really will.
Yeah, set pieces again with James Ward-Prowse. Obviously, they hurt Everton, hurt Liverpool a lot.
I like Kudus. That's one we have.
He's been an amazing
season. Obviously, he was linked with Liverpool last summer a little bit. He's been linked with Everton in the past. Like, you wonder how long West Ham can keep hold of him, because he's still so young. Like, he has another 6 months, a year like he's had this year. He's moving on to one of the top four. Like Paqueta, he's not going to be at West Ham for much longer.
They've got a lot of players. I think the time has gone for him to move on. But Jared Bowen, I absolutely love as a player. I think he would have been brilliant for Liverpool. He's got a great low centre of gravity. He moves with the ball well. He's evolved well. He's clever. He scored a really good goal at Anfield earlier in the season. And I just think he's a really, really good footballer. And I think compliment isn't the right word, but they set up well against Liverpool. But where do you see it being won and lost? Do you think it's one that Liverpool can get back on track with?
I was concerned last week about the Fulham game because of how good they've been at home, and I think it was something like close to 70% of their points were in the home. So I was worried by that, and Liverpool sort of made light work of it, particularly in the second half once they got ahead. So maybe it might be something along those lines tomorrow. A lot will depend on the team selection, obviously, but it's whether he kind of goes back to that midfield against Fulham that seemed a little bit more in control of the situation. But no Jota again is another huge blow, isn't it? Gakpo might come back in, but just having that absence of Jota means you're not going to score a little scruffy tap in and nick it if you don't deserve it. The people are going to have to deserve to win on Saturday.
So let's pick our teams then. I've done my lineup and I'll predict the story that we do overnight, and I was sort of debating in my own head, but you basically give them a big kick up the backside and make changes for this one and say, well, it's not a lot left to lose this season. You know, the sort of third place and then get over the line for third place back in the Champions League. So do you sort of say that wasn't good enough, or is making too many changes taking too big a risk?
You make changes. I think you go back to the players that deserve the chance, the ones that don't look fatigued, the ones that look like they're a little bit of form in them, and maybe you have a look at a couple of the youngsters again. Like, it'd be nice if we could see Stefan Bacetic make a first team return before the end of the season.
Just get him off the bench.
Yeah, just get him off the bench. See a few more minutes of like a Bobby Clark or a Jadon Dance, those sorts of players. But there are players in that squad who probably deserve more chance than they've got this season, and that we've seen positive glimpses from him, like a Harvey Elliott. Oh. So you want to see more from him. And Ryan Gravenberch, he did well against Fulham. Like, he deserves another.
He grew into the games. Yeah. Really. Go on. So what? Black that up with your defence. So I'm taking Alisson as right.
I do not want to see Konate in a starting 11 again this season on the basis of his recent performances. So Quansah can come in and make that place his own until the end of the season for me. But the rest of the back five is probably the same. Mm-hmm. And if Trent needs a rest, fair enough, because he's still managing it a bit coming back from injury. Klopp alluded to that in the press conference today. So you've got Joe Gomez on standby. But if the rest of that five are good enough to go, they're good enough to start.
Yeah, I'd go along with that. I'd take the point about Trent, so I'd start Joe Gomez ahead of him, and certainly agree with him on Quansah over Konate for tomorrow, definitely.
So it's funny, this might be a bit knee-jerk, but I would go with Gomez, Quansah. I'd stick Tsimikasen as well. I think certain players just need a rest. They look jaded. And
that's something they're not spoken about. Those final two subs in the derby, throwing in the towel, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was very strange. It almost felt like he wants to make a point with them rather than win the game. It was like, you two of my most experienced players who should know what this game is all about, get off the pitch. So yeah, I would certainly play Gomez and Tsimikas, and Quansah, I think, absolutely deserves his spot. Watch your midfield, Gorse, there you go.
Yeah, all change for me. I think we're going to bring an Endo. Elliot deserves a crack of the whip, and why not grab him back?
Yep,
same trio for me. Elliot's done well when he's played midfield this season. Got an assist last weekend, didn't he? Gravenberch, once he grew into the game, he showed he's got something. And like you've said, Liverpool haven't got much to lose at this point. You'd imagine they're still going to get top four. He's been in and out of the side. Just let him get some rhythm now, get him some confidence heading into a new season with a new manager. Same country, obviously. They're both Dutch. So hopefully it can be the start of Gravenberch's real Liverpool career after that transitional period bedding in.
Yeah, I think it's a good argument for Gravenberch, all that being said. It wouldn't get mad. Yeah. I'd have Endo back in. Elliot, I think, absolutely deserves to play. I think he should have started in the derby. And I think, I think slowly over the season. I mean, I've talked on this pod before about not knowing where Elliot really fits in, but slowly over the course of the season, I've started to think more and more he needs a bit more trust in him. He needs to play a bit more. He's so sensible on the ball. He keeps hold of it, shields it really well, takes balls, you know, like switches play quite well, takes balls under pressure. Mm. Well,
head never drops either.
Yeah, head never drops. He works diligently.
He was unlucky, actually, weren't he, with that shot? Yeah. Good save from Pickford.
Yeah.
So I'd have him in. And I just keep McAllister in, because I just think McAllister was played in the wrong place on Wednesday night. And all right, he struggled and he gave away a lot of free kicks, but I don't think he should have been in the six, and he's been so good for Liverpool this season.
I just think he's run out of steam a little bit.
Potentially.
He was in great form, but then he's one who's overplayed. And you're seeing it now.
Who's your forward line then?
Gakpo's straight back in.
Yeah, same.
Diaz keeps his place just because he was the only one of the three who actually showed anything against Everton. And then it's probably Salah, because you give him more of a benefit of the doubt than you do Nunes. You've got more faith in Salah playing and eventually finding that touch again, but you could drop either of them. They're both so anonymous at the moment when they play.
Yeah, I'd go with that. I'm not quite as harsh on Salah, but certainly needs to find a spark from somewhere, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think so. But Salah's one of the ones that I just think, like, the consistency over the course of his Liverpool career, I think
200 goals.
Any hot takes on Salah being finished? Come on, let's. As a great man once said, give your head a wobble.
Who else said that?
Well, not for this podcast, but yeah, I certainly would say, like, Salah deserves to play. Congratulations to Cody Gakpo.
Yeah, young Samuel.
Yeah. Great choice of name. My name's not Samuel, if anyone's wondering, but I also have a son called Samuel. So, yeah, me and Cody are on the same page, aren't we?
Congratulations. Yeah. No, it's interesting, though, the Klopp allowed them to be there, whatever, because famously Rafa Benitez didn't let Xabi Alonso go, did he? And that was the beginning of the end for that relationship. So it's Klopp's man management.
Well, Klopp didn't have anything to lose. I'd have said to him, stay put, it's the derby. You're only going to stand in the corner and feel awkward. trust me. Yeah, it's not... it's not fun. mind you, the derby was much more fun.
No,
it was probably equivalent of giving birth. that will make our predictions. That was painful.
Yeah, one all draw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'll go 2-1 because I was positive enough after Fulham. We're going back to basics. Completely writing off the derby. It didn't happen.
So am I. West Ham are in a really bad place as well, aren't they?
They're on the beach, aren't they? If you look at the table, they're pretty much not going to get in Europe. Obviously, heads are dropped after getting knocked out of Europe. Their season is done. They can just roll over. Let Liverpool get a 10-0 win, close that goal difference gap and be ready to sneak the title on the last day when everyone loses.
I'd like to share my glass of Carabao isn't that full. I'd need to drink quite a few Carabaos to feel that positive. I still think... I think 3-1. I think they will win this. Other games like Aston Villa, I think, are going to be very tough. So there you go. 160 odd watching. Give us a like. There's only 4 thumbs up. Get those thumbs and put them up. Don't put them down. And then press that bell.
It would have been funny if someone had given one down there. But nice. Yeah, 4 thumbs
still
up.
Still 4 thumbs up. Give those thumbs up. And thank you for listening. Thank you for all the comments. Loads coming in today. It's great to see them. Really pleased to be back on YouTube. And yeah. Missed you, as if Liverpool aren't on the beach. Well, they're on Crosby Beach if they're on any beach, aren't they? They're not really in the Bahamas at the moment. And we'll be back on Monday to talk West Ham and look ahead, put some gin in that Carabao. Yeah, and a few other things besides that. Right, see you on Monday to talk West Ham and look ahead to the next week. Thanks very much for listening. Give us a like, subscribe, some stars, and we'll see you Monday. Ta-ra.
You've been listening to the Blood Red Podcast from the Liverpool Echo.